Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, yesterday was the birthday of the first Irish ever player to play Major League Baseball. Tommy Bond was born in Granard County, Longford, and it's the starting point for a long and interesting relationship between America's national pastime and Ireland. And to tell us more, off the ball's Cameron Hill. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
We'll talk about baseball, and I'm in. I know nothing about it and I don't enjoy it. The only time I've ever been to a match, it went on endlessly. Mm. So I'm not fascinated. But first of all, Mick O'Dwyer has passed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, where do you start? One of the synonymous names up there with Roy, Sonia and plenty of others in terms of you just know who to talk about and they just embody a sport. For All-Irelands as a player between 1959 and 1970, I don't think it's a coincidence that it mirrors the most prolific period of Pele in another sport. 8 as a manager with Kerry. Kieran Donaghy was on Off the Ball Breakfast today talking about how those tapes and how Mick O'Dwyer's team set up was like a foundational text in Kerry football and that every young footballer was tasked with watching videos of him. But just an incredible life, really. It yeah. brings Leash to their first ever Leinster title in 2003, first in 57 years. Brings Kildare to the All-Ireland final in 1998. Yeah, even the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste are leading the tributes. Yeah. Kieran Donaghy was on with us, and I'm sure plenty more beautiful tributes in the next
will come
few
in
days.
The next while. Mick O, may he rest in peace. Now, back to baseball. What prompted this?
So I was looking into just interesting facts around baseball, and I noticed that there's an Irish Baseball Hall of Fame which details the 47 Irish born players to have played in Major League Baseball since its founding in the mid 18th or 19th century. Two of those have been immortalized in baseball history. So we'll talk about Tommy Bond in a second, but Tony Milan was born in Cork City in 1851. He was the first league pitcher to throw with both arms during a game in 1882. He won 240 games as a pitcher, making him, according to baseball writer Jerry Grillo, the second all-time in wins among pitchers who were not in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. And he does still hold the league record for wild pitches. Those are pitches that don't go over the plate and are particularly bad. So not a great record to have, but it's still there in his history. But the other one is Tommy Bond. So he was born in Granard, Longford, on the 2nd of April, 1856. His family emigrated to Brooklyn in 1862, and he made his pro debut with the Brooklyn Atlantics, who later became the Brooklyn Dodgers, in 1874.
Okay, so 47 Irish people in total played Major League, Irish-born people. Mm. I mean, there would be many people with an Irish name who've gone on, I suppose, to play Major League Baseball in the United States.
Yeah, the likes of Wade Boggs would be the first name that comes to everybody's mind. Mark McGwire, maybe for good reasons and bad, given the sort of doping scandal that rocked MLB in the late 90s to early noughties. But lots would consider themselves Irish and have Irish heritage.
Now, was it a big money spinner back in those days? I mean, did you make money as a professional, or were these all kind of amateurs who had a day job?
You would have made money all right. Like, they were professional players, but it wouldn't have been huge. And actually, we'll come to it later, but it leads, basically, the payment of players leads to the Black Sox scandal in 1919. Even Tommy Bond, during his career, he was at the Hartford Blues after moving from the Atlantics and accused a teammate of throwing a game against the Boston Red Stockings. That was pretty common because they would be paid a substantial amount, far more than what their salary was at the time. So his accusation probably wasn't unfounded, I would say.
And this is based on gambling, I presume. That
yeah.
If you could throw the game, then you could make a bet and make a fortune.
Yeah, yeah. The name Arnold Rothstein in the very early days of La Cosa Nostra come to mind in terms of fixing baseball games. Mm. That was how they really made their cash.
Now, these guys, obviously, as a pitcher, I mean, you look at people and you look at the man with the bat and he's the kind of star of the show with the home run and so on. The pitcher, how celebrated were they, and how did you get the reputation of being a star as a pitcher?
It was really tricky because the baseball rules at the time really favoured the batters. So there was a very specific and long-winded sort of criteria and rules for how to pitch. So you had to throw underhand, and there was no real way of becoming a defensive pitcher, that is to throw what they call no-hitters. And actually, Bond is the closest to a no-hitter when he plays against the New York Mutuals in his debut season. So that's a game where no batter registers a single hit on the pitcher's throw throughout the game. And Bond made it to the final inning, the ninth, but with two outs to go, so literally at the death.
No one managed to hit any of his pitches up to this moment.
Up to this very last one, the last chance for the Mutuals. And first baseman Joe Stray hit a double to scupper Bond's finest hour. It was actually broken in a game a year later in which Tommy Bond was the opposition pitcher.
Now, at the end of his career, I mean, literally his arm was worn out.
Yeah, so he won three in a row with the Boston Red Stockings, having joined in 1877. So that was an unprecedented run. But baseball started to get very, very tough. And Bond was playing an average of 536 innings per season. So that could go on long in terms of how many hits you get. And that began to wear out, especially when he was setting a load of records along a lot of his most prolific career. He was the first player in the history of the sport to win the pitching triple crown, for instance, in 1878, which is the league leader in wins, strikeouts and runs conceded. Only 16 players have managed the feat in history, but they increased the schedule by 40% in 1880 and also increased the length between the pitcher's mound and the batting plate.
Went to 43 feet to 50 feet or something like
that. Yeah, it seems small, but when you're throwing for 500 odd innings per year, yeah, that really adds up. So he started to really struggle. He tried a few different comebacks during his career. He coached at Harvard for a bit and even took his turn as an umpire, but he never really managed to make it stick. He married, had three children, worked in the Boston Assessor's Office for 35 years and died in 1941, aged 84.
Who was the last Irish-born player to play Major League Baseball?
That was PJ Conlon. So he was born in Belfast and grew up in America, went to the San Diego High School, or high school in San Diego, and was starting pitcher for the New York Mets in 2018. But he's not an active
player. But he grew
up
really as an American, I suppose.
Yeah, but we'll take it.
Now, there was a tour, a baseball tour to Ireland. Explain.
So in 1924, the New York Giants and the Chicago White Sox, two of the big franchises in baseball at the time, were suffering from respective slumps. So the Giants just lost the World Series to the Washington Senators, and the White Sox were still tainted by the Black Sox scandal. So for people who don't know what that is, eight of their players, including some legends of the game, accepted bribes to throw the 1919 World Series against the Cincinnati Reds. It is still controversial to this day, more than 100 years on. But New York owner John McGraw and Chicago kingpin Charles Comiskey took their teams on what was meant to be a more extensive tour of Europe. It ended up being only a 12-game exhibition tour. And on October 26th, they arrived in Dublin for a game in Croke Park.
And it was A disaster.
So the decision came in apparent defiance of the notorious Rule 42, which, according to the rules of the GAA, bans non-Gaelic games or so-called foreign sports from being played at GAA venues. Now, baseball was given the green light and apparently wasn't even the first non-Gaelic event to be allowed into Croke Park. So this is mad. Tex Austin's International Rodeo came to Drumcondra just earlier that year in 1924. And according to the wonderfully named historian Turtle Bunbury, thousands flocked to see stars like Nuwata Slim Richardson, Ruth Roach and Tom Kiernan perform in a feast of steer wrestling, bronc riding, trick riding and pony express races.
And obviously that they did flock there, they enjoyed it hugely. But the first game they had scheduled for Croke Park was at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning.
Which is a tough time because it was a time when most Dubliners were attending Mass. By all accounts as well, the weather was shocking on this day. So the game had not been very well publicised either by the promoters. Some Dublin newspapers dubbed it the American secret match, with one paper quipping, "For citizens of a nation which has made a science of publicity, the American baseballers during their visits to Dublin have shown a really remarkable reluctance to be thrust into the limelight." And David Wynn further explains that there had been some confusion over the scheduling, with reports that it was meant to be taking place in November. It didn't help that a few games in the Dublin Football Championship had also been scheduled for that day, and so a grand total of 20 spectators turned out to see the Sox beat the Giants 8-4.
There was a second game scheduled?
Yeah, that was cancelled, as were the exhibitions in Belfast and Cork. They obviously cut their losses and went to London then.
Did it ever come back to Ireland, baseball?
Yeah, in the late 40s actually. So servicemen who were based in England, US servicemen, played a number of exhibition matches, I believe one in 1946 and one in 1948. But the seeds of baseball still haven't really sprung up here in Ireland yet.
Cameron.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.